Hey, du hast voll viel New Wall Art.
Oh ja, ich habe irgendwann letztens mal endlich mal mein Office zusammengesetzt. Ich habe auch in so ein neues
Ja,
Regal.
genau, also das habe ich schon
Ach
gesehen.
so, okay.
Entweder hast du mir das gezeigt oder in irgendeinem Video, keine Ahnung.
Es kommt mir auch so vor, dass wir wirklich schon ewig nicht mehr so aufgenommen haben, weil die letzten zwei
Stimmt.
Episoden haben wir ja in München aufgenommen.
Ja.
Und davor ist irgendwie schon so lange her, es ist ja so viel inzwischen
Ja.
passiert. Also das können wir jetzt alles im Podcast erzählen.
Did you get that? I'm so confused.
Also ich verstehe nur Bahnhof.
You only understand train station? It's all Greek to me.
Understanding train station. Living between cultures with Josh and Phelan.
Welcome back, everyone, to another episode. Currently, I'm like super stressed because I've been jumping around from meeting to meeting. So if you hear that in my voice, I'm sure hopefully throughout the course of the podcast, I start to relax a little. But glad to be back with you guys this week.
Yes, I'm sure a lot of people can relate. I feel like this time right now, it's supposed to be like the start of the calm season. But I mean, in reality, it's really not. Like the calm
There's no calm
season,
season in
exactly,
life.
it's the opposite. Like usually like fall and then everything, especially in the US, you have Halloween, you have Thanksgiving, you have Christmas, you have all
Yeah.
these social obligations. Then like it's the end of the calendar year, which always means a lot of stuff at work and whatever, taxes, budgeting, all these fun things. So I'm sure a lot of the listeners can relate. But maybe
Yeah.
we can use this episode today for like a little getaway out of the stress,
Yes.
like a little audio vacation, which actually is kind of the topic that we're probably going to talk about today a lot, vacation, because we both went on one since the last
Yes.
episode, since we recorded the last episode, I should say, which
Yeah.
was over a month ago that we
That's
recorded that.
crazy.
And a lot has happened since then.
Oh my gosh, so much has happened. And it's weird because I feel like we recently gave an update, like, about reverse culture shock and vacation in the US. And we've talked about our travel experiences relatively recently, but I feel like
That's
so much
true.
has happened that
New
another
travels.
update is worth it.
Yeah,
Exactly.
definitely. Well, it's probably going to be like the last episode where we talk about traveling and summer kind of feelings for the year. So one last time to put ourselves into this really nice, relaxing state of mind. And we're going to have, you probably already see it in the title, a guest today, a very special guest,
Woop
my
woop.
boyfriend Ben, who has been to Europe with me three times by now, and this was the first time that we also went to Italy, and we also went to Greece, and you also went to Italy, Josh.
Yes.
So there is a lot of stuff to talk about. A lot of Americans recently went to Europe because your mom was also there. So yeah, I'm sure there is a lot of, as you said, culture shock experiences, etc., that we can talk about. Before we have Ben join us, though, let's talk about one amazing thing that you can do if you also want to travel relatively soon or want to prepare for next summer and would like to learn the language of the country that you travel to, like Spanish, for example, or French, or of course, German, if you want to go to Oktoberfest next year, maybe. Or, of course, there's also a lot of other things to see in Germany. But as you know, we both recently went to Oktoberfest a few times. How many times did you go, Josh?
Oh my gosh, I think I went eight times.
Okay, that's like, it's pretty good, but it's not like crazy yet. I feel like when it gets over 10 times, that's the craziness level. There's people
Yes.
who go like 17 out of 17
Yeah,
days.
it's insane. It's insane how often people go. But if you are going to go, speaking German is, or at least a little bit of German, is definitely something that's helpful.
Yeah.
And Lingoda is a great opportunity for you to work on improving your language skills or beginning a language learning journey. Like Feli mentioned, they offer German, Spanish, French, English, and business English. If you, I don't think you'll use too much business English at Oktoberfest, but it's a great opportunity if you need to work on your English in business settings.
You can always make business connection at parties. Like
This
alcohol
is true.
and partying is always a great setting for that.
Yes. So if you are interested, Lingoda offers a couple different programs that you can do to begin your language learning journey. The two main ones are their Sprint and their Super Sprint. The Sprint is 15 classes a month for 2 months. And if you meet all of the requirements, you can get 50% cash back. The super sprint is similar. It's for those of you who are a little bit more ambitious and sometimes you need a little bit more of a push. It's 30 classes a month for 2 months. And if you meet all of the requirements and are successful, then you can get 100% cash back, which is an amazing opportunity when it comes to learning a language. You basically are learning a language for free.
And you can save even more if you use our discount code UTS2022, so UTS2022. With that, you can save 20 euros, which is $25, off your deposit. That's something that you just have to pay when you sign up. And you can sign up through the link that you can find in the YouTube info box or the show notes off the podcast.
And like I said, sometimes your life is a little crazy and you're jumping from one thing to the other. So one great advantage with Lingoda is that they have flexible courses. So you can always basically find a course or a class for you at a fitting time. They have teachers all throughout the world. So you can really tailor your language learning experience time-wise to fit your schedule. I know that can be something that's difficult for a lot of people when they're trying to learn a language or do something outside of their normal schedule is finding the time. And Lingoda is great about making sure that they are available when you're available.
Yeah, it's sometimes hard when you want to sign up for a course and then like you can, it's three times a week or something like that. And you can do two of, out of those days, but not the third day. And then you can't do the whole thing. So that's not going to happen with Lingoda. You can literally take a class at 8 a.m. or at midnight.
Exactly. It's a huge advantage. So if you guys are interested, like Feili said, make sure that you check out the information in the description box and in the show notes and check out Lingoda. And with that, let's go ahead and bring Ben on and we can get talking about our vacations and what the perspectives of two Americans and a German traveling this summer have been. Well, welcome, Ben. We just did a quick little introduction of who you are, but we're super happy to have you finally on the podcast. Some of you who watch Feili's channel will definitely recognize Ben and know who he is, but maybe you can do a quick introduction of yourself for those who aren't as familiar with Feili's channel, which would surprise me if you're actually listening to this podcast, but either way,
how dare
who are you?
Okay, so other than saying Feili's boyfriend, that should be the first thing that comes up. That's part of the reason why I'm here.
He's also currently downstairs. I'm upstairs, so that we've done that in the past too with your roommates, Josh, where like it's kind of weird if two people are on the same screen in these calls. So, but yeah, we're in the same house. We live together.
We got to save those audio levels. But I'm an American. I'm from Middle America. I'm a media professional. I work as a photographer, and I have become a complete Europhile. And I just got back from Oktoberfest Munich with Feili. Saw you there. And yeah, I guess that's why I'm here today.
Yeah. Well, thank you for joining. Yeah, we thought it would be fun just because we've all done quite a bit of travel lately just to kind of share experiences. I'm super intrigued also with your progression of how you've experienced Europe now that you've come three times, kind of what your first impressions were versus how you've experienced it this last time and traveling to different countries throughout Europe now. So I'm sure we'll get into all of that conversation, but maybe we should just give everyone a little bit of an overview of where we've been and what we've been up to. So maybe Ben, you can explain what this last trip was for both you and Feili and where you went and what you did generally.
Yeah. So number one, I'll say it was a lot. We started out in Munich. And we left mid-September, correct?
Yes.
It's been so long that, and it felt so long that it's just, time's just been jumbled.
Yeah, that's what I just said to Josh. It feels like so much has happened since the last recording. Like, it's been about a month since our last podcast recording, but it really feels like 3 months.
Yeah.
Just with all the experiences that we've all gained since then.
Yeah. But no, we started out in Munich. Our plan was to see the beginning of Oktoberfest. We did that. It was great. It was awesome. I spent 2 days in Munich for Oktoberfest. Then we went to Venice. And what I didn't know is that we were going to go to Greece right after Venice. We ended up going to Santorini.
I forgot that was a surprise, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Which we can talk about that a little bit more, but it hit me across the head. Like I had no clue. I was clueless.
Well, he was really excited to have a new country in Europe that he could kind of check off his list.
Yeah.
And little did he know that he was actually going to be able to check off two other countries.
Definitely. But like that, okay, talking about that though, I want stamps in my passport. Like I always joke with Feili, like I want the stamps, but that's the thing about Europe is that you don't really have to get the stamps.
Especially once you have a residency permit here too, I never get a stamp anytime I come. I just give them my card and it's all digital.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. I feel like I should be telling people, like, I'm traveled. Like, trust me, believe me, I can't show them the stamps in
my
passport.
Well, but see, that's why you collect all your little souvenirs from every single place that you go to. Ben has started the most, like, I say it's a very cheesy thing to do, at least from a German perspective.
I know exactly what you're
going to
say.
He started to collect snow globes.
Oh, yeah.
He has American. A snow globe from every single place that we've been to. Did you get one in Santorini?
Yeah, of course. Okay, yeah. I have to account for the weight in my suitcase. But no, after Greece, we ended up going back to Italy and going to Rome and Florence. I'm still reeling from that. My head hasn't really even processed what happened, number one, that I went there. And then throw Oktoberfest on top of that, and it'll just have you shaking your head for the next few weeks, and I currently find myself doing that.
So just to recap, because we've kind of talked throughout it too, you were in Munich, then you were in Venice.
Venice. Mm-hmm.
Then you were in Santorini in Greece, yep. Mm-hmm. And then you were in Rome. And did you go to Florence or no?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Florence for 2 days. Florence. Yeah.
Okay, so yeah. Those were the cities that you visited.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a lot to process.
Yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
So Josh, where did you go? Because I know you've told me before, but I honestly don't even remember. I know you also went to Venice and that's about it.
Yeah, it's a lot to keep track of. So yeah, from my perspective, what I've been up to, my mom actually came to visit me with one of her friends as well. So we met here in Munich drove to Cinque Terre, which is in Liguria, in kind of northern Italy. It's mm-hmm. five villages that are on the cliff sides, right on the Ligurian Sea.
Okay.
Amazing. Then we drove down to Florence, spent a couple days in Florence, and then we stopped in Siena for an afternoon, and mm-hmm. then stayed in Montepulciano in Tuscany, and did kind mm-hmm. of like a Tuscan wine trip, basically. It was amazing. Cool. And then from there, we drove to Verona, where we dropped off our car. And then from Verona, we took a train to Venice.
Wait, so you didn't take your car?
No, we took, not to Venice. We took my car the entire time.
Oh, for a second,
Verona.
I thought you meant like dropping off as in if it was a rental car or something that. Okay.
We parked my car in Verona mm-hmm. while we took a train then to Venice.
And then back.
Obviously. And then back, okay. And then back to Munich. And then I just took my mom to the airport this morning, so it's all very fresh.
That's crazy. When did you come back from Venice again?
Last night.
Last night.
It's been like I said, it's been jumping from one thing to another.
We were actually considering going to Verona, but
we just didn't make it anymore.
Didn't have enough time. We were worn
out. I mean,
out.
I say we were
it.
In Verona. We had lunch in Verona, and that was it.
Okay.
So I definitely want to go back and visit that. So yeah, we have some overlap in some of the cities that we've seen.
Yeah.
So that is definitely going to be a conversation point for us. Before we get into the details of these two trips, I just would be interested, Ben, in understanding if you feel like your perspective or your travel experiences coming to Europe has progressed or developed now that you've come a couple times. Maybe are there things that you noticed this trip that were different than the first time that you came?
I mean, this trip, for sure. I think that was mostly because of the traveling and then also something like Oktoberfest, Wiesn going on. I got to see Munich in a light that I really haven't seen it in before.
It was also very crowded for once because like the first time we were there and the second time too, which was last Christmas, that wasn't even that long ago. But for Christmas even, the corona restrictions were still super harsh. So like we couldn't even go into stores without showing our proof of vaccination on the phone and everything, and definitely masks everywhere. So I feel like this time was also the first time that you've really seen Munich in like a kind of normal state in a way.
Yeah, it was. I mean, the first time, like you said, the first time that we had to go there, I had to go through all the bureaucratic process of getting the vaccine passport, which it wasn't that hard, but it was just the process of getting it is kind of inconvenient on top of all the travel stuff.
Yeah, and a lot of stuff was close too. Like mm-hmm. a lot of restaurants and just things that I would have wanted to take Ben to were closed, or like they only took reservations and then there wasn't like a slot available. So it didn't really feel normal to me. Like it was always mm-hmm. like, oh shit, I would like to show you Munich, what it's like normally, but I can't really right now. This is like a
But
state
I still got
exception.
The magic of the city, like, during those times. That's what was really, really redeeming for me, is that I felt like I got to experience the city. Honestly, I'm really happy I traveled during those times, because the downtown really wasn't as packed as it was, for example, this time. Mm-hmm. This time, it seemed like downtown was twice as packed. The pedestrian zone was twice as packed as it was the first two times that I went. I will say that I'm getting a little bit more used to Germany and Munich mm-hmm. in that area in general, but it's still fresh. I still turn every corner and I see something that my jaw just drops, or Feely keeps on walking and I'm absolutely mind blown by this building that's 700 years old. I will say this time though, people were really, really friendly. They were more and more social in general. And I think that was a hangover of Oktoberfest. I think people just feeling the, you know,
no pun intended, or
yeah,
a hangover.
Well, yeah. Well, I didn't even think about that, but yeah, I guess it is a hangover of Oktoberfest. It gets better every time I go. I see something new every time. And like I said, I'm a Europhile. So even though I didn't get to see certain things over COVID, it just gives me a reason to keep on going back.
Very cool.
Well, I do know that two things that I just know because obviously I was with you and we talk about it a lot. And we're also actually publishing a video today. I'm not quite sure if it's already out or if it's still coming out. So you can just check on Feely from Germany. But we're going to publish a video about your first experience at Oktoberfest. But I know that after that first night we went, Ben turned to me and he was like, I think that was the first time I've experienced real culture shock.
Okay, because this is something I wanted to get into. And I know that people can look at your video to learn more about it as well. But I just was interested of what your experience at Oktoberfest was, because I think that's kind of the start of your journey, this last trip. Tell me about it. How did you feel like you were experiencing culture shock? What were your impressions?
Okay, so to pick up from what she just said, that first night, we worked all day. And we didn't go. It was the first night of Oktoberfest in general, the night of opening.
That was actually the day that Josh and I recorded those last two podcast episodes. So we recorded the podcast episodes, and then I was editing a video for the next few hours, basically until it was night.
Yeah, yep. And per the usual, time just goes, and before you know it, it's 9:30, and we still want to go to Oktoberfest. And we show up, we get all like decked out in our tracht and all that stuff. And I was super excited, didn't know what to expect. The closer I got, the more and more anxious I got. And then we got there, started walking around, and got into the tent. And the tent was truly the first time I've experienced like an overload of culture shock. As soon as we got there, people had 2, 3, 4 liters in them already. It was wild. People on the benches, people yelling. Like you couldn't hardly walk through the aisle.
Yeah, it was very packed. Even though we've easily found a seat, the aisles were extremely packed for some reason. So like it was like we lost each other a couple times because we had to kind of squeeze through people. So yeah, I could definitely see how that would be a culture shock, especially I think we were sober and everyone else was completely drunk at that point, especially because it was the first day. So people had been drinking since like noon. A lot of them hadn't eaten anything before they started drinking, and they had been up for super long because like the first day people just get up really early. So I think, yeah, it was definitely madness. And then if you come in there as a foreigner, not really knowing what to expect, and then you're also sober, I think that just makes it even crazier.
I mean, it did help getting a leader in you. And once you get a leader in you loosen up and join in on the fun. But nevertheless, it was one of those situations that I never really experienced. I've been to plenty of bars, wild parties, spring break in Florida, nothing on that. Absolutely nothing.
Interesting.
I don't know if it was because it was foreign. You know what I mean? Because it was something I'm not necessarily used to. I'm still kind of trying to figure that out. But once I got over that initial culture shock, I just wanted to keep on going back. I wanted to go back for not just the inside of the tents, but experience it. I'd go outside, take in all the sights and sounds of the place. Because even that was almost overwhelming to me.
Yeah.
The only thing comparable to it would be like a state fair. And the scale of it, a state fair is not comparable. The amount of people, at least. So it got better as I kept going.
It's interesting for me to hear that. I mean, it makes sense. It's something that is unique. And I think I've experienced it enough at this point myself that I know what to expect and I'm completely used to it. But for someone who doesn't necessarily know exactly what they're getting themselves into, especially going later in the day where people were probably drunker than usual, I can understand how that could be overwhelming, especially if you're still a little jet lagged and getting your bearings, people speaking German. Yeah, there is a definite difference between the vibes at European parties or at Oktoberfest in general, I would say, compared to what we're used to in the US. So I think that makes sense, but I mean, I know by the end you definitely started to enjoy yourself. I can speak from personal experience yeah, and from I mean, viewing. And yeah. not just that evening, but also throughout the... I know we went again with each other. I got you guys yeah. into a tent, which is still one of the highlights of my life.
Yes.
just maybe briefly so people understand what happened. I was outside of one of the tents without a reservation, stood there for like good 20 or 30 minutes with a group. There were six of us who were trying to get in, and we were just about to give up because they had the doors shut and weren't letting people in. And then a waitress just comes up to me, walks past like 10 people and comes directly to me and just asks me how many people are in my group. And I say six, and she said, come with me. And then later on in the evening, I was able to get you guys into the tent too. So I felt really good about myself.
That was really cool.
Which six is a lot of people for a group, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, especially yeah. in a tent that's closed because it's already full. Yeah.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And I like if the tents are full, I thought this was really, really funny. You'd see people standing out front by like where the doors are closed.
Uh-huh.
And I guess someone would come out to the crowd waiting to get in and they'd be like, how many people do you have? And then you see all these hands go up and they're like, yeah. 5, 2, 4.
It's like an auction.
You put up two hands, it's like, well, that guy's not getting in.
But that was crazy too, because we actually came with six people too then. So you already got six people in yourself, Josh. And then we came with a group of six and then you got us in as well. So yeah, that was really cool. Props to you.
Thank you. I asked her why she chose me and she said you looked reasonable and sober.
The perfect yeah. son-in-law face.
Exactly. But no, yeah, but
he's American.
I can say towards the end, we had a really fun time together there. And yeah, it's cool that you got to experience that finally, because I know you've heard so much about it.
Yeah. Yeah. And like you said, I did loosen up by the end of it. And I
think you loosened up the second time, the second
yeah.
day.
Yeah. I kept on saying I'm a peacock. You got to let me fly. So as soon as I got in there, I just automatically got it. I started flying.
Yeah. It's like any new experience. You have to get used to it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I also think I prepared you pretty well. I told you about all the songs that you're going to have to know. I gave you a Spotify playlist to listen to.
You did. You did. But this is a little spoiler, but I said this in the video that we're about to publish. Even though your videos and like other videos will acclimate you, like introduce you to Oktoberfest and just Wiesn in general, it's one of those things that you have to experience to fully understand it. That's part of the reason why I had the culture shock, because that I thought I had an idea of what I was getting into.
Right.
Like a pretty good understanding. And once I got there, yeah, I did have an introduction. I did have a little bit of an understanding. But until you smell it, see it, feel it, everything, you don't have a full understanding of what it is. It's almost unexplainable to someone that hasn't seen it before or hasn't.
You also said that you didn't really expect it to be that big, right?
No, no. That was the biggest thing that shocked me, in all honesty, is that not just like an area big, like.
Yeah, because like you had seen the area before, actually. Like we had been to Theresienwiese previously when Oktoberfest didn't take place. So like you had seen how big the festival grounds are
yeah,
or is.
Are.
But it's completely different once they have everything set up. It feels like almost like a little city.
Yeah, it basically is. Once all the people will converge on that place, that's the other aspect of it being large in scale, is the amount of people. I've never seen anything really like that other than like a music festival right at the front of a crowd. Because mm-hmm. you'll be walking at any point, whether you're inside or outside of Oktoberfest, and you will constantly have people bumping into you, like rubbing up against you. In the beer tents, you might have a little bit of beer spilled on you.
Oh, yeah. People falling also every
yeah. oh,
now
yeah.
and then.
Which
while
I was
they're standing
so scared
on the
of that.
I don't think you guys were in the tent when they were doing the Wir fahren mit dem Bob song in the second time. And we were in Breurosel.
Yeah.
And some the people were doing like the dance, like yeah. Linkskurve, Rechtskurve. Yeah. And two benches completely fell.
Shit. We also saw benches collapse on the very last night, which I mean makes sense because they had been in use for like a long time
yeah.
at that
yeah.
point. But yeah, a few of the benches just broke down on that last night.
Talking about the first night that gave me culture shock, one of the things that kind of like was a learning point, like a lesson for me, I saw some dude like scorpion falling off of one of those benches where he landed basically on his neck, on his back, and his legs
yeah, he landed
went
on
over
his
the rest of his body.
He fell off a box, so like off like the railing of one of those side boxes.
Really?
So yeah. He was really high up from where he fell down. People who've seen the beer tents before kind of know maybe, but it's like much higher than just being on a beer bench. That was weird. Like I was like, dude, and he just got up and he was fine. I was like, he could have just broken his neck.
It looked like he did.
But we're kind of making it sound like it's this like crazy, insane,
it's not
dangerous
that
place.
Crazy.
It's
yeah.
really I mean, not. It, I mean,
what, the funniest part was is whenever he got up, he like got up, started looking around, like, did anybody see that? And then it's like, yeah, dude, you're at an Oktoberfest tent. Someone saw
the
it.
The first night we walked just into the festival grounds outside, I know one of the first things we also saw was like a dude doing a push-up challenge on the ground, and there were like three Krüge or something like and they still had beer in them, so they took them out of the tents, which you're not actually allowed to do, and did some kind of challenge of I guess maybe who wins the beer, I don't know. But it was really like not that crowded that first weekend, and I believe the second weekend wasn't that crowded either, but that last weekend it was kind of back to how it usually is, and that's I think been when we experienced the whole you can't really walk and people bump into you nonstop.
I thought it was crowded the first 2 days, and that was just plain wrong.
It was a slow start.
Yeah. Once we got back from Italy and everything, we knew that the weather was going to be a little bit nicer, and it seemed like just about everybody and their mom wanted to go to Oktoberfest.
And that last day, which was also
crazy.
The German national holiday, and that was day that the weather was actually nice. I think it was nice every now and then, like when we were in Italy, but at least for those weekends, I believe that was like the only sunny day that we had, because the weather was really shitty this year for Oktoberfest. Mm-hmm. So I know a lot of people, a lot of families went out, even if they hadn't been. This was kind of the day where everyone was like, ah, damn, it's the last day. We haven't even been yet. Let's go today. And then everyone was out there really, like, especially by the rides and everything.
But yeah, I guess if you guys want to know more about Oktoberfest, because this could easily just turn into an episode all about Oktoberfest.
Yeah.
But I say we try to keep the pace moving and we talk about some of the other travels as well. But if you want to hear more about Ben's experiences at Oktoberfest, make sure you check out that YouTube video on Feli's channel and you'll get all of the details.
Thanks for the advertisement.
The plug.
Yeah.
You can't do it. Well, I guess you can, but.
Oh, I can and I will.
Shamelessly.
Then let's talk about Italy, I guess. Or it was not, let's talk about your mom also. It wasn't your mom's first time in Munich, but how did she experience
it? You're talking about me. I'm sorry.
Oh.
I was like, wait, what?
Sorry.
So it wasn't my mom's first time visiting me here. When I was here for like a 3 month stint or something, she came to visit. So she was already familiar with the city for the most part. So a lot of what she saw in Munich was seeing it for the second time. But she had a friend with her who had never been to Munich before. So
that's cool.
I took the two of them and we kind of like just a city center tour, like started at Odeonsplatz, then worked our way to Marienplatz, went to the Viktualienmarkt. We stopped by Hofbräuhaus. We walked through the Glockenbachviertel to the Isar and then went through the English Gardens. One thing, though, that was really disappointing, I wanted to show the two of them the Eisbachwelle and the surfers. And we got there and there was no wave. The wave was like so small that you couldn't surf on it. And there was one surfer there like standing off to the side looking confused. So my mom's friend went and asked the surfer like what's going on. And the guy told her that I guess they were cleaning the canal that day.
Oh,
so there were no surfers, which was really disappointing because that was their only opportunity to be able to see that. But yeah, so we just did kind of your general, a simple tour of Munich. It was their first day, so they were super jet lagged still. So trying to keep their energy levels high while walking throughout the city. And then the second day, we actually drove to Garmisch and went to Zugspitze. We took the gondola up to the top and that was really cool for them. I hadn't been to the top there either.
It's the highest mountain in Germany.
Exactly.
And it's about like an hour south of Munich or so.
Yeah, I think it's like an hour and a half drive. Totally worth it if you have the chance to go. For me, it's kind of funny though, because my mom and I were comparing it to Matterhorn in Switzerland. And it's so much smaller than Matterhorn. But it's still an amazing experience and you can have you have a really, really nice view of all of the mountains when you're looking south towards Austria. And at the top, you can actually walk into Austria because it's shared. And they have like a little old like passport control, because before the Schengen area, they used to have someone up there checking passports when you would go back to the other side of the mountain.
That's crazy. I don't remember that.
So that's a border. That's a border spot.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Okay. That's crazy.
Yeah. So half of the mountain is in Austria. So it's just cool because then we walked over to Austria real quick just to get the Austrian views before going back to Germany.
So Austria owns half of Germany's tallest mountain?
Basically.
Yeah. I mean, it's not Austria's tallest mountain, though.
Yeah, that's true.
So that was super cool. And then we had dinner with some friends of mine here in Munich, and it was just a really nice time.
How long did they spend in Munich?
Just 2 days.
2 days.
Because then the next day we drove to Cinque Terre, which was actually kind of a long drive, surprisingly. I think it took us 8 or 9 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily, my mom was able to help some with the driving. Her friend would have helped as well, but she didn't know how to drive stick, so she couldn't drive my car.
Mm. Yeah, good thing. Wasn't your mom a bus driver?
She was. Yeah, she actually used to drive a school bus that was a manual transmission.
Yeah.
That's a manual transmission school bus?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Dude, sounds brutal.
Yeah.
She like was one of the kids only in the back, too?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Oh, no. No.
She was one of the only drivers who knew how to drive sticks, so they gave her that bus. But yeah, it was a really fun trip. And then we went to Cinque Terre, which, like I said, I totally would recommend. I just love being by the water.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, like you were saying, Ben, with Oktoberfest, and like you can feel like you're prepared by doing all of your research and watching the videos and, yeah, doing as informing yourself as much as possible before going. It's just totally different when you're there and you're just taking the views in person and just being a part of things. And that was a really cool experience in Cinque Terre because I'd never been to Italy before either. So it was my mom.
I was going to ask. That's cool.
It was my mom's and my first time in Italy. And then her friend that was with us had been there before, but not to Cinque Terre and not to a couple of the other places that we went. So it was a really fun experience that getting a lot of firsts in together, drank a lot of Aperol Spritz.
That's what we did too.
My mom fell in love with Limoncello Spritz as well.
Mm.
I've never had that. That sounds good.
We only had limoncello shots.
Okay, yeah. But yeah, then from there we drove down to Florence, which I think is the first city that we both visited. So what did you guys think of Florence?
Well, for us it was the last city, and it was rainy the one day that we were there.
Okay.
So that's just like something that I think we have to start out with.
I really liked it. Don't get me wrong, I loved it. But there's a part of me that wishes we would have started there because once you experience Venice and then you experience Rome.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that those two are better than Florence by any means, but just the like magical aspect of Rome and Venice, they're two cities that are unlike any other.
Yeah.
For obvious reasons. And Florence is to a certain extent, but it just seems less like wondrous. It doesn't make your jaw drop every corner. I remember walking through Venice and it was like, how is this place even possible? As a photographer, I could literally close my eyes, go around in a circle and just hold down my shutter. It was amazing. And then Rome, just the age of it and everything like that.
And Ben's a big history person. Yeah. So that was just insane for him to like see all the Roman history. And
And not to like put that history on a pedestal over Florence history, but I just am more interested in antiquity than like the Renaissance. So
exactly.
I will say this, the Florence museums were really, really cool. We got to see two or three Da Vinci's, and we got to see a few Michelangelo's, some Caravaggio's. Caravaggio's my favorite artist. It's really funny anytime we go into a museum, which Philly likes them. I just love museums, and I'd go into all of them if I could.
Oh, I don't have a problem with museums in general. I'm just like not a big like antique art person or Renaissance, whatever, like all these like especially religious paintings, feel a lot of them just look the same to me. Like I can definitely appreciate the art of painting, but I don't have to see hundreds of them at the same time. I'm more interested in more like, you know, historical or educational museums. So art museums for me are kind of like cool for like half an hour, and then it's like okay, I feel like I just saw that same thing before. That's, I know that makes me sound like a Kulturbanause, which I might be. That's a German
a
word.
Kulturbanause.
I do not know how to translate that.
I don't know that word, but yeah.
You guys are saying untranslatable things right now.
Yeah.
I don't know it.
It kind of just means that you don't have the education and the knowledge and the appreciation.
Like a country bumpkin.
Maybe.
Country bumpkin.
Yeah, okay.
What do we say? Country bumpkin.
Country bumpkin. Yeah. That's me.
Yeah, it could be something along those lines, yeah.
But no, also we saw the Michelangelo's David.
That was incredible to me. I mean, it was so much bigger than I was expecting and so much more detailed than I was expecting as well.
Oh, yeah. And I didn't even realize that it was made for the church, technically, the dome, the Duomo.
I don't think it was it made for the church. He made it out of a piece of marble that was meant for the church. And then they put it in the square, I thought.
From my understanding, the marble sat around Florence for 30 years or so. Mm-hmm. And whenever nobody had basically the balls, guts to work on this big piece of marble, it was deemed unworkable. Mm-hmm. And then here comes Michelangelo and he gets the commission for what the statues at the top of the tower. That's why it's so big. You would have had to have seen it from down low. And he ended up carving it and they saw it and they were like, this is too good to go up there. This is going to go somewhere else. So they ended up putting it. It was outside for a little while, but they ended up putting it in there.
So I have a quick, story to share and also a question for you, Josh, actually, before I tell the story. How did you experience the security in Italy, like the security checks when you go into museums and other buildings? Have you done a few of those? Because we did a lot of tours and stuff.
We didn't do too many tours. We went into a couple museums, but this...
into the museum where the David statue was?
Uh-huh.
Okay, so there, for example, they had it there, where like just a metal detector and stuff.
Yeah, no, I think I'm pretty sure I had to put my bag through a machine.
Yeah, you do. So the thing is, they do that, but we did it like a lot in Rome, like for the Vatican, for the Colosseum, for several museums in Florence, and every time... They just like, they had people there and they were just not even looking at the screen like what's in your bag. Or like one time it even beeped. Was it for me or for you, Ben?
One
of us was beeping at the metal detector and they didn't even check them. They didn't even pat him down anything. And that kind of ties in with the story because we were standing in that museum in front of the David statue and I was just reading up on it and it said that at one point, I don't remember which year it was, but it was relatively recently in history. Like, I don't know, maybe 10 years ago or so, a person brought a hammer into the museum and started hitting David's foot. And you can actually see that it got destroyed. And then the thing that I was reading, the article said, that's why he's now behind glass. I like look at it. It's right in front of me. Not behind glass at all. And I'm like, well, and also like I would not be surprised if people did that again because you can just easily bring stuff into those buildings because they do not check what's in your bag or if you're
That's
beeping.
A good point.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with Italian security. Like, I was surprised by that.
The worst to me was the Vatican because we were going into St. Peter's in St. Peter's Square, and that's where you line up, queue, and have to go through the metal detector. Mm-hmm. And I was walking through, and I always put my medal in my coat pocket so I can just simply take off my coat and get through quick. And it beeps on me. They're like, you're good. But I look over at the person that's in front of the screen because it's like a two-person thing. One person's watching the actual gate, and then the other supposed to be watching the screen. And this guy is literally head on hand.
Sleeping.
Eyes shut. Sleeping. And I was like... And this was after we already experienced a few other places, and we were like, Italian security, not the cream of the crop.
I guess, so did you notice, and it sounds like yes, but significant cultural differences between Germany and in Italy?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
What were some of the things that stood out to you?
I know the biggest thing.
I know what's coming too, but that's why I'm provocatively asking the question.
The way that I described it to Feely is that I could live in Germany, but I'd vacation in Italy.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Ben, you're not even picking up on what we're pointing at.
I don't even know. What
the
is
driving?
It? Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. If you go to Italy, specifically Rome, just use public transportation. Driving in Rome is a madhouse. I don't even know where to begin. I could just rant on this for 30 minutes alone. Road signs are merely decoration. Lines are suggestions.
Or there are none.
Yeah, or there are none.
In Rome, there were like these super wide streets with like technically like up to five lanes next to each other, but there were no lanes. So like people were forming lanes, but also not really. So there were a bunch of just in between lanes and nobody really knew, is this like a left turn right lane or no? Or yeah, it was, I mean, I already knew like what it's like to drive in Italy. I had never driven in Rome before, but I was honestly like not that stressed because everyone else was like didn't know what they were doing either as a local. So like I didn't really feel that stressed, but I was driving and I think Ben in the passenger seat was freaking out even more. I was losing it.
I was sweating beads and I'm serious. I think that like you were talking about the lanes. Like, whenever there are these pseudo lanes established, on top of that, there's guys on mopeds that are, like, coming through at 20 miles an hour in between the cars, scraping mirrors. And then I swear every time that I'd look over, someone would be on their phone. It's almost like it's recommended to be on your phone while driving.
Yeah, that's true. Even on the interstate, though, you'll see people do not stay in their lanes. And that's something that, I mean, I always kind of knew that, but for some reason, it really stood out to me this time because it happened so much. And as soon as we crossed into Austria on the way home, it was fine again. Suddenly, people knew how to stay in their lanes. But it's pretty crazy how Italians don't know how to stay in a lane. It's really not that hard.
It didn't surprise me that much, though, personally. I felt like this was actually funny because on the drive down, the way that we drove from Munich was actually via Switzerland. So we drove over to Lake Constance and then down through Switzerland. And I got tired, so I had my mom drive some while we were in the mountains in Switzerland. So that was not particularly well thought out on my part, having her first time driving my car. So a new car for her in a new country in the mountains. Mm-hmm. Could have timed it a little better. But then she drove from Switzerland into northern Italy, and then there started to be a lot of roundabouts once we got off the highway, and she was starting to get overwhelmed. So I took back over, and we got onto the highway then, and I felt like I was just driving again in the U.S. I mean, it looked very much like the U.S., the way that the highway was set up or the interstate was set up. It felt very much like the U.S., and even the way that people were driving, I was like, okay, this is a little crazier than Germany. But my mom was like, Josh, why couldn't I have driven on this portion instead of through the mountains? But yeah, I mean, I'm sure Rome is also a whole different situation because it's the capital and there's so many people and it's crazy.
Yeah, the amount of people, like you just said. And then what was shocking to me is that specifically in Rome, everyone is so courteous. Like everyone was so nice. They all knew English. I tried to, you know, speak a little broken Italian, grazie, you know, all that stuff.
Grazie.
Grazie. Sorry. But as soon as like people got in their cars, it seemed like that all just like went out the door. I went on Facebook afterwards and I went on some like big long rant about it because it honestly stuck out to me more than just about anything. That was another little culture shock for me because as Feely already said, I was stressing so bad in the passenger seat that I just wanted to get out of there at that point. The last day in Rome was amazing. Our time spent in Rome was amazing. But getting out of Rome honestly didn't taint it, but it made my last day a little bit more stressful than it should have been, I felt like.
Makes sense. And it's always difficult when you're ready to get out of a place. You're just like, okay, I don't care where I am. I want to get out. Maybe we should, just looking at time, also talk about Venice, because I think those are the two main cities that we had in common on our trips. And this made me think of a story when I was in Venice. It was our last day and we were trying to leave our Airbnb to get back to the mainland to be able to drive back to Germany. And we got up early, got to it's the ACTV. So like, it's not a water taxi. It's like the water bus basically. So it's just the public transportation. And we had our bags already. The boat pulls up already very full. A lot of people get off and then everyone gets on the boat and then we get ready to get on. And the guy says, no, there's no more room for you with your bags. So then we had to go to another line. This was supposed to be kind of the express boat. Mm-hmm. To get us back to the train station. And he sent us to the line that was like the slowest with the most stops. And like by the time we got to the train station, I couldn't stand looking at another person. Like you get to this mental place of I just need to be where I need to be and leave me alone and I can't handle it anymore. So I can totally relate to what you were saying.
I think that's a totally natural response to it though, especially whenever you're in a place that you're basically, well, yeah, I had no idea what was going on around me. I don't know how those cities work. I experienced them for like a week.
And they're both very touristy cities. So, yeah. Like, I mean, Venice is really mainly tourists throughout the day. And then at night it gets, like, really calm. But it's just a very touristy city. So is Rome. There's really just tours and tourists at every single corner, no matter where you go. So, yeah, that's just something that you have to expect. And both of us went technically kind of off-season. I mean, you went even later than we did, Josh. And I guess it was still pretty packed. So that's just something that you're going to have to expect if you ever want to travel to Italy, and specifically some of those touristy places that, you know, there's going to be lots of people. So if you're someone that has like social anxiety or something, it might be a lot.
But what did you think of Venice? I mean, you talked about how beautiful it was. What were some of your other impressions of the city? I remember I got out of the train station. I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. Like, there are no more cars and it's just boats everywhere.
Well, that was my first experience of Italy. And we showed up at night, and I'm really happy we did. Like Feely just said, Venice at night is really, really cool, because it seems like that city just shut down a little bit earlier. And once you get into Venice, the parking garages are right off the bridge. So there's no driving after that. So we had to walk or get a water taxi to our Airbnb. And we just decided to walk. So we're lugging our big 40-pound suitcases 20 minutes to the other side of Venice. And I'm honestly happy we did that, because experiencing that city at night is really cool. You feel like you're in like a Renaissance city, the small little alleyways that are only 3 feet wide. And then
almost like a movie set or something like that.
That's what we were saying the whole time. It's like, we feel like we're on a movie set or looking at a movie set.
It feels like that throughout the day, 100% too, but especially at night. You also stayed in Venice, right, Josh?
Yeah. We stayed really close to Piazza San Marco.
At night when like all the tourists just disappear, I think it's because most of them don't stay in Venice directly. Maybe I don't know. That's just an assumption. And then all the locals are kind of inside. And I also noticed that restaurants close a little bit earlier in Venice than they did other places. And then it's just like quiet. And like the Airbnb really we had too, we had a like a rooftop terrace kind of. And I got up there in the morning and it was completely quiet, like silence. Even though it was already like 8 or 9 a.m.
Oh, wow.
But there's no cars. And we were just like in one of those kind of quiet little side alleys. And you just don't hear a single thing. It's insane.
Yeah.
It feels surreal.
Another thing that was a major curveball for me in Venice, did you have to take out your trash at all?
No, we didn't. We only stayed 3 nights, so we didn't. And we didn't accumulate that much trash. But I know you're not like supposed to take it out into the street or something. Our host said something about it.
Yeah, there's no putting it out in the street. And since everything is with boats, they basically have to pick it up the day that you put it out. And it was really, really funny to me, because we have a note on our door that says, don't put trash in the street. And they were like, take it out on this day at before this time to this thing.
To the trash pickup.
To the trash pickup boat, the location. And which I understand it. I guess Venice, I could see where pests, rats, and stuff like that would really like Venice, because, you know, water, fish, all that stuff being around. But everything operating by boat there, taxis, delivery services, trash pickup.
We saw someone moving.
We saw a refrigerator on a boat.
Or like I saw a whole like Amazon or whatever, like it was like a delivery boat that had like all the packages. I don't think it didn't have the name Amazon on it, but it was like a DHL truck basically, or UPS truck, but it was a boat. Or like how they deliver all the beer and all the drinks to the restaurants and stuff like that. It's like all on boats, and it's so cool.
Yeah, it's so out of the norm that it's just a really cool thing to experience.
Another thing that I noticed while we were there specifically is the amount of construction, which I don't know if that's because rising water levels or whatever. I know that Venice has had some problems, but like right out in front of St. Mark's, and I'm sure it was still going on while you were there, there was a lot of, I think they were redoing parts of like the sidewalk and the foundation and stuff like that. And I noticed it that in the hole, the trench that they dug out, it was already filled up with water. So as soon as they basically start digging into the ground there, it just automatically starts either filling back up, or the high tide came in that day. And honestly, the fact that that city exists is the craziest thing to me, because how is it that old? How is it a canal city like that? How is it that well engineered? How is it still around?
It's crazy.
I know. And the coolest thing about Venice to me was it's sort of like this mishmash of
cultures.
Because if you look at St. Mark's, for example, and the Doge's Palace, half the stuff is from Byzantium or Ottoman Empire because they traded a lot there. I figured out that coffee showed up in Europe for the first time in Venice. So thank you, Venice. You got me addicted to coffee.
Oh, yeah. Ben had a great time at Italy because, I mean, you both love coffee. I am not a coffee drinker. But, I mean, Ben just said that he already got hooked on the German espresso and just, like, German coffee in general. But then we made it to Italy, and obviously I already told him it's going to be next level there, but he said it was nuclear.
Yeah.
I have to say I was so depressed today when I went into the office. And I got myself a cup of coffee from our machine. It was so gross compared to the Italian coffee.
Europe in general, but Italy especially.
Yeah.
Does, like, every time I come back to the U.S., I will get a coffee just because, you know, traveling, I want a little bit of energy. And that first sip I take, it's always like, man, I'm in the U.S. again.
Back to reality.
I would like to tell a story on that topic. So when I met Ben, he drank a lot of sugar. I mean, he still drinks a lot of soda, but he was like very American in that regard. And you would get McDonald's coffee with like three sugars in it, right? Like you really consumed a lot of sugar.
That's so much sugar.
Yeah, that is a lot. It is a lot. So for some reason, I don't even know if it was like, I don't think it was a conscious decision of yours. I think it's just being in Europe and kind of drinking all this other coffee and maybe also being with me more and drinking and eating more what I consume. Now you went to McDonald's and got a coffee this time with no sugar because you've already reduced it like a lot. Yeah. And you were still like, this is way too sweet without sugar.
Yeah, it's literally dessert coffee. But what my sugar consumption or my sugar use in my coffee, that was a progression. I went from 3 to 2 to 1.
There you go.
At 0.
To 0.
So
it's a weaning off of the sugar addiction.
Damn straight.
I think it really just kind of shows how crazy things sometimes are in the U.S. Like, Americans don't even question it. But I always tell the story where, like, I really love sweet stuff, and I'd never used the words too sweet ever in my life. Like, that wasn't a thing for me until I came to the U.S. and I had like really, really sweet apple pie with super sweet whipped cream and vanilla ice cream, and I was like, I can't eat this. This is too much.
That was one thing that my mom and her friend were saying a lot throughout the trip. Was we would go to like get pastries for breakfast or whatever, and they're like, it's so good and it's not too sweet. Like, it's sweet. Mm-hmm. It's tasty, but it's not too sweet. It's like, you can
enjoy
it. It's
not like covering up the actual flavor.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, this is a little bit related, but the Italian McDonald's are mind-boggling. Number one, because of the coffee, but two, the sweets.
In Rome, they have like a sign for McDonald's at every single corner. Like, I don't know what McDonald's did there to get that permit, but every single corner has a sign that points to the nearest McDonald's. So at some point we went, and I think you actually just got a drink, right?
Yeah, I got it. I wanted it.
Oh, no, you also got a McDonald's on the road in Italy one time to eat.
Yeah, that one was right across the German border, wasn't it?
No, it was on the way from Venice to Rome, I think.
Oh, yeah. But
either way, the McCafe at Italian McDonald's apparently is really good.
Yeah, well, they have like espresso bars. They have like proper cakes and proper pies. It's not like the little McDonald's pie and the little thing.
I know exactly what you're talking about.
It is a slice, and you go sit down and eat that. I really wish they had that here. I will say that, because I feel like an espresso in the U.S. is not readily available. You got to go hunt that down.
Yeah, you just got to search for it.
Go make one yourself, which, you know.
You have an espresso maker.
Yes, I do. The luxuries of home.
Before our time is running out, Josh, what were your, like, if you had to summarize it or give us like the highlights or maybe also the lowlights of your trip, what was your kind of verdict of Italy?
I mean, Italy was amazing. I mean, I think my two highlights were Venice. Even though it's super touristy, it's just such an incredible city.
The crazy thing about Venice, though, is like it is very touristy, but especially if you do live there and you kind of just walk everywhere, there's so many spots even throughout the day where there's no people. Like, we
it's
found
true.
Like these super quiet spots, or we would be on a bridge all by ourselves, nobody inside.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah, just wanted to throw that in.
No, for sure. And I think if I had to name two highlights, well, I'll say three. My three top things were in Cinque Terre and the city Manarola, we found like this this bar that's up on a hill, like up on the cliff, and you have an amazing view of the sea and the bruschetta and the Aperol spritz. It was like euphoric at the top. That was a huge one for me. I would say number two was the food, just in general. The first night, the food was just kind of but then after that, it just got better and better and better. I had these big ravioli that was like a pumpkin mixture with a sausage on top. It was so good. Like,
yeah.
I ordered it twice.
Did you have the same feelings for Italian food as I ended up having? Because
what did you end up having?
Italian food doesn't really exist here in the U.S. That's basically my foregone conclusion of going to Italy, because it's just literally in a completely different dimension. It's so much better.
It's so good.
Yeah.
It's so good.
And it's so cheap too. Like even in Rome, a pizza margherita right by the Colosseum is like €7. Spaghetti carbonara is like
so
€10 maybe everywhere, or like maybe up to 12 if that. It's just crazy. And then I think we talked about it a little bit before, but if you go to an Italian place in the US, it'll be most of the time awful quality and it'll not really be Italian. But then also it'll be like $25 to $30 for a normal main course. And it's like, what's going on? It's just spaghetti with a little bit of sauce.
And then I'd say my last highlight was our last night in Venice, or the last night of the trip, we did a food tour.
That's cool.
So a local took us around to 5 different locations and we got food and wine at all of them. And so it was at night. It started at 7, so all of the day tourists were gone. Yeah. So you really felt like you were experiencing Venice as a local, as close as you can. So that was a really cool experience. Like, our guide was amazing, and the food was good, the drinks were good, and it was also fun just to experience that with other people as well, besides our small group. I think there were 15 of us in the group altogether, so it's just as fun to go through those communal things. So if you're going to visit anywhere, I definitely recommend taking a food tour as well.
Yeah, that's a good tip.
I'll remember that if she doesn't.
Yeah, we didn't really have a lot of buffer time. We were only in Venice for 2 nights, so basically like 1.5 days, which is technically enough for Venice. Like, you can see Venice in a day, pretty much, the most important things at least. Our trip was just very intense, and we were always going to the next place and the next place, which was great because we got to see a lot in a very short amount of time, but we didn't really have time for like all these kind of extra things. We did the mandatories, and then we had to move on. But yeah, next time we'll do that.
We're cognizant of the fact that we're starting to go over on time, or I have, like I said, a super busy schedule right now.
Social obligations.
So we're going to have to stop the episode here. Maybe we can bring Ben back on, because I want to hear more about your guys' experiences, especially with Greece, and also maybe get some more input on your impressions of Europe throughout the time. So if you guys have questions for Ben, maybe let us know in the comments.
If you have questions about the trips in general, to Josh, to us, if you are curious about tips, or because I know a lot of followers of mine have already asked, hey, so would you recommend this? Is this a good time to go? Blah, blah, blah. Just like all these kind of touristy tips that, especially if you've never been to Europe, you might have no idea about. Maybe we can help out a little. So feel free to leave a comment on YouTube, and then maybe we can either make it part of a Q&A episode in the near future, or we'll just respond to them on YouTube.
So I think we're going to go ahead and wrap it up for this week's episode. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you want to support us and follow us and keep up to date with what we're doing, Faye-Lieve, what's the best way for them to do that?
You can follow us on Instagram. It's @UnderstandingTrainStation. Maybe we can actually remember to post some pictures of our trips. And then you can also message us on there. You can support us on ko-fi.com/UnderstandingTrainStation and send us a tip. Or you can also support us on patreon.com/UnderstandingTrainStation. And of course, you can subscribe or follow to the podcast on your audio platform that you're listening to right now, or on YouTube, of course. And that's also where I think it's the best place to leave comments and kind of open it up to a public discussion. Thank you so much, Ben, for being on the podcast. I'm going to see you in a minute.
Yep. I'll come upstairs. But thank you guys for having me on. It's nice to be on this side of the podcast instead of on the editing, so I'd love to come back. I'd love to talk a little bit more about it, and you know.
Cool. Thank you, and then Josh, have a great night, and you guys will hear us in 2 weeks on Thursday.
See you then.
Cheers.
See you guys.
Ciao.